Now, I do believe that this is the now is the most talented the NBA has ever been. That's not a fact. I can't say it's a fact, but that is a real opinion of mine. But I'm not about to go look at 1995 and watch Jordan in the finals and be like, oh, this is it. It's just different. Welcome, welcome, welcome back to the Kenny Beecham podcast. I'm excited for today's episode, ladies and gentlemen, because we're going to be talking about the bottom of the barrel teams for the last time this season. The NBA playoffs starts in a little bit over a month, and I think that this next month, I'm going to be focusing on all of the standings, all of the awards, all of the other things in these bottom 10 teams, the 10 teams that will not make the postseason. This is probably the last time we're going to talk about y'all, unless something ridiculous happens, unless somebody drops 60 points on one of these teams, unless Victor Wembanyama put together another 5x5. This is probably going to be the last time we talk about your team, at least into the offseason. So with that, we're going to celebrate these 10 teams by ranking them about how excited I am for them next season. Not the long-term goal, not 2 years down the line, 3 years down the line, but just for the 2014-2015 season. We also got your favorite segment. No. My favorite segment, Ask KB. And then we got your favorite segment at the end. That's Greg's Eye Test Takes. Now, I do want to say before we get to ranking the bottom 10 teams, I want to remind you to leave a like on the episode, subscribe, tell a friend, and tell a friend if they need their NBA fix to keep up with all things basketball, specifically the NBA, the Kenny Beecham podcast might be for them. Leave a like, subscribe. Let's get into it. All right. I got into a little bit of hot water with three of the bottom 10 teams fan bases in the last week. I'm going to do my part and make jokes and make light of some really interesting situations, right? So Wizards fans, when I make jokes at your expense, it's not because I dislike y'all. Hell, you deciding to do a rebuild, I give you so much praise for, because that was not the Watch the Wizards way for the last 10 years, right? But you're still in a rebuild. And you're still losing a bunch of games. And I think we can have some fun at your expense. Only for now. Now, tonight, you ended up beating the Miami Heat. What a great win. Kyle Kuzma, since the All-Star break, is putting up ridiculous numbers. Since we moved Jordan Poole to the bench, he's actually looked like a real NBA player. There are some bright spots. But nonetheless, for the 2014-2015 season, y'all are dead last in my excitement. Now, all of this is very fluid, right? Who knows? The Wizards can pull off some ridiculous trade. They trade Kyle Kuzma, get back some pieces that I really enjoy watching to be a part of their young core. They can win the NBA lottery and draft the prospect I believe is the best. I don't know who that is just yet. So all of this is very fluid, but based on what we know right now, y'all are number 10. And I think that's okay because, literally, this is the first year of your rebuild. Now, the last couple seasons weren't great, but you weren't in a rebuilding phase. You were kind of stuck in mediocrity, and now y'all have picked a decision. It's a dub. But that decision is not about to get me super interested for the 2024-25 season, so I'm going to have to put you at 10. Excited to see what Bilal Coulibaly's offseason looks like. I'm excited to see what Denny Abdia can look like. I'm pretty sure, is he playing Olympic ball? Let's say yes. But other than that, you're number 10. Number 9 on my list, and you know what? This team is one of the other teams that I got on some hot water with for making, again, a joke. maybe I should not make jokes. But the other 29 fan bases thought it was cool. We'll see how it goes. The Brooklyn Nets had I really, really contemplated having the Brooklyn Nets at number 10. And it's because the front office, really, I do not know what this team is. They end up winning tonight against the Cleveland Cavaliers, who didn't have Max Strus, Dean Wade. Oh, yeah, Donovan Mitchell, and Evan Mobley. But they got to win. That's all that really matters. I do not know what this team is. They don't know what this team is. But one thing they're pretty sure about is Mikal Bridges is one of the major building blocks of that organization, which I respect. But Mikal has not been looking amazing since the All-Star break. He had put up 20 points tonight. But before that, he was struggling to hit 15. His efficiency was down and so on and so forth. A lot of us recognize that Mikal Bridges probably is not a number one option on a good team. And now we kind of solidified that. And that is okay. Like, being the number one option on a good team is extremely hard, and there's only a select few people that are up for that task. Mikal Bridges is still, if he was on the trade market right now, even though he's having a struggle of a season by his own standards, there's going to be teams lining up to put in offers for Mikal, because you think about him as the third best player, the fourth best player, there's not many people better. 3-and-D guy, and now we know that he can put the ball on the floor and create a little bit more for himself. But deeper than that, I just don't have a lot of excitement about this team. You know, Ben Simmons, one more year of Ben Simmons, maybe, maybe not. He's out for the rest of the season with some back stuff. And me and the guys had the conversation about whether or not you should feel sorry for Ben Simmons. I don't know the man personally, but if he enjoys basketball as much as we might think he does, then I feel bad for anybody that can't do the thing that they love at the height. I mean, we saw when he made an All-NBA team, he was a full tank. Get to the basket at will, dunk on your head, dish it off. Sometimes dish it off when you should be dunking. You know what that's about. But since then, not the same. I watched the highlights from that All-NBA season just to remind myself of who Ben Simmons was, because the last 3 years, we ain't really seen the man. And I watched that highlight reel. It was like a 36-minute highlight tape. Shout out to all the people that put together those highlight reels. And I watched, I want to say 100 of his minutes this season. I mean, he don't got a ton of minutes on the year, but 100 of his minutes this season don't move the same. And that's expected, right? You have a couple back surgeries. Of course, you're not going to move the same. Michael Porter Jr., you look at his high school mixtape. He's not moving the same as now. He's turned himself into a great NBA player, though. But does not move the same. And when you have a combination of not having the athletic gifts that you used to have and not having the confidence that you used to have, I mean, Ben Simmons hits the open market, hypothetically. I don't really know what team would take that on. Can't provide any spacing. One thing Ben Simmons has been really good at, though, in the small amount of time we've seen him play this season, last season, is that off a break, he's still one of the better passers in transition. But if that is the only thing you bring it to the table because the defense is falling off because he can't guard 1-5 anymore. Anyway, should you feel bad for Ben Simmons? Sure. Yeah, I say I would. But other than that, it's not a lot going on there. And it's not like they have a real recipe to make things go right other than trading some of the pieces that are going to be valued because they don't have their own draft capital. My number 8 team in this is the Portland Trail Blazers. There's been a lot of conversations about Scoot Henderson. He's having one of the worst efficiency seasons amongst top 5 pick guards. And it's kind of a cherry pick stat, but that's a fact. But if you compare it to some other guards who didn't play well, and maybe I'm stretching a little bit. All I'm saying is I'm not giving up on Scoot based on his rookie season, right? You compare his efficiency to like rookie Kemba Walker. It's pretty close. You compare it to rookie De'Aaron Fox. Pretty close. You compare it to rookie Darius Garland. Pretty close. All I'm saying, and I'm not saying he's going to get to those players' peaks, but what I'm saying is let's pipe down a little bit on the rookie point guard that's struggling with his efficiency. Because we've seen this before, over and over and over. And sometimes the bad efficiency stays the same way the entire career and they never live up to the hype. But we also see other times where that second year is a lot better, that third year is a lot better. And the good thing about him is that he got time. Technically, just like we said with the Washington Wizards, this is the first year of their rebuild. The third year of them missing the playoffs. Third year, remember the last 2 years, Dame had the abdominal injury. He missed a bunch of time. They missed the playoffs then. And then last year, obviously, the Dame stuff too. But this is their third year of missing the playoffs, but first year of the rebuild. But when I mention it being a rebuild, I got a little bit of a pushback from some NBA viewers saying, like, Kenny, is it really a rebuild if they traded away Dame and Yusuf Nurkic and got back a max player? Now, he might not play like a max player, but DeAndre Ayton. Max player. Is it a rebuild if they sign Jeremy Grant to this long extension? Now, if you remember the timeline, Jeremy Grant signed this extension like a day before Dame requested a trade. A lot of people believe that Dame didn't tell them that he was requesting a trade, but wanted Jeremy get his bag before he went deuces. So Dame went a hell of a teammate. And then also they didn't trade Malcolm Brogdon, you know? So is this really a rebuild? If they trying to retool, they still have Anthony Simons on the book. Like, a rebuilding team, traditionally, it has so much cap space, so many young players and so on and so forth. This team don't really have that. Now, on a night-to-night basis, they're running out really bad lineups, really, really young lineups a lot of the times. But still, is it a rebuild? Is it not? I'm going to keep saying yes. But again, they got a lot of money attached to real people. But again, don't give up on Scoot. Shaedon Sharpe, can we get some healthiness out of you, man? I just want to see you play a full season. And that's all. Number 7 on my list. Utah Jazz, one of the hardest teams to really place, because I don't know when Danny Ainge is going to decide to flip the switch. This is the second year in a row. In the first year, they traded away Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, got some stuff back, and they started off the season pretty well for the standard that we thought they were going to be on. You know what I'm saying? They were about 500 at the All-Star break. Things were looking good, and they decided to trade their guards. They decided to trade some of their vets, and then they slowly tanked down the standings. And something similar happened this year, where they've slowly tanked down the standings. But I just don't know how they expect to do a rebuild. And maybe Danny Ainge also doesn't believe this is a rebuild. But how do you do a rebuild when you have to hit, okay, hitting a top five pick is just easier than hitting the 8th overall pick every season, the 11th overall pick every season. And the Utah Jazz, the way they've played their last two seasons, they're ending up in like 8 through 12 every single year. It's either we turn full on to being bad so we can get one of those top picks, or we use some of the draft capital and all the other stuff that we got back from Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell trade, and we buy in a little bit. Like, there were a bunch of rumors about them wanting to go out to get DeJounte Murray at the deadline. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I actually like that pairing a little bit as they need some more guard play. But I think they decided that Keyonte George was their guy. And I like that. I like that because Keyonte is one of my favorite prospects. Shout out to the guy. He's really cool. Apparently, he used to watch one of my shows that I did. So shout out to Keyonte. But it's just a hard team to really pinpoint what to expect from them next season. Larry Markin, I think, has another year on his contract. So what's his extension looks like? Is there extension coming? I'm going to assume yes. He feels like a Utah guy. He loves Utah from everything I've heard. But again, look at some of the other pieces. It's just some other teams I'm a little bit more excited about. You feel me? Number 6 on my list. And I'm actually really pissed off that I got this team this high, because the Detroit Pistons do not deserve me to be excited about them anymore. Not the third year in a row. Not me falling for the same trap over and over and over. This team is dreadful. Has been dreadful. And next year, will it be dreadful again? I don't know. Now, they have one of the biggest cap spaces in all of basketball this offseason. This is not an offseason that has some super great players. Do you want to give the money to DeMar DeRozan? Do you want to give the money to Tobias Harris? Do you want to bring Buddy Hield? Up to $68 million in cap space if they play their cards right. But who are they using that on? Now, I hope they use it on a couple different people and kind of use the model of the Houston Rockets. Because the Rockets, though they're a team that we're talking about being another lottery team, we saw them take a huge jump. And that was partially because they brought in some veterans and built an identity and a culture. And you expected that with Monty Williams, right? You expected Monty Williams to build a culture, and it has not happened. So maybe free agency is the way to do that. But since the All-Star break, Kay Cunningham has looked amazing. He's looked like the number one overall pick that a lot of people expected him to look like. But again, he's doing it with not great pieces around him. You know, Asar Thompson is one of my favorite prospects, one of my favorite players in basketball, but he doesn't make life easier for Kay Cunningham. You know, running Isaiah Stewart doesn't make life easier for Kay Cunningham. So maybe the Buddy Hield sign is actually pretty great. Get some spacing over there. But you know what? I might adjust my ranking right now. I might adjust my ranking right now. Because why should I have any optimism about this team? I don't love what Troy Reaver has done. The deadline was weird to me. I don't understand it. Everything they've done has been just... But I look at the roster. You can't tell me that those names don't get you a little bit excited. And then you look at their schedule, you look at their roster, and you look at their record, you're like, man, ain't no way. You know what's interesting? You know what's interesting right now? I've been tallying up. I've been watching the race for the bottom, right? In the Western Conference, you see the Minnesota Timberwolves, the Denver Nuggets, the OKC Thunder, the Clippers fighting it out for the top 4 seeds in the Western Conference. That is so fun. Every single night, things are shifting. I'm watching the bottom of the Eastern Conference. Now, this is not like it was 5 years ago, 7 years ago, where the team that had the worst record has significantly higher odds in the lottery. The bottom 3 teams have the same exact odds. So both the Pistons and the Wizards are going to have the same odds regardless. But I don't know who's going to go down as the worst team of the season. And today, like I mentioned earlier, the Washington Wizards ended up beating the Miami Heat. So now the Wizards have a 1-game advantage on the Detroit Pistons. But Detroit has a chance to change that. Because if you go to FanDuel Sportsbook, tomorrow afternoon, we have Pistons versus Hornets. And the Hornets look bad. After a week or so after the trade deadline, we're like, oh my God, Grant Williams, you're looking amazing. Oh my God, this and that. They have been struggling to put up 100 points. And it is so bad that the Pistons, who are, again, the worst team in the association by record, are a 4-point favorite to beat the Charlotte Hornets. Now, if that stays the way and they end up covering, they will be tied with the Wizards again. And we're going to have this back and forth and back and forth of the battle of the for the bottom. And I don't like the way that sounds now that I've said it like 4 or 5 times. But it is very interesting to see the Pistons favored because they have not been favored in many games this season. And earlier in the year, they were favored an okay amount. And then y'all know what happened. You lose 28 straight games. I don't think they were favored in any of those games. You know what I'm saying? And now they got one. Will they live up to it? Only time will tell. FanDuel is putting the ball in your court for the rest of the NBA season because new customers get $200 in bonus bets with any $5 winning bet. That's $200 if your bet wins. Bet on the NBA with a wide range of bets, like quick bets, same game parlays, and player props. Personally, I like taking the money line of one of the bottom feeder teams, especially when they're going against a contender. So visit FanDuel.com/Kenny and make your first bet a layup. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. First online real money wager only. $5 pregame money line wager required. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued with non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbooks.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit fanduel.com/RG. In Colorado, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona. 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut. 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas. 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. Visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia. Or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinepa.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts. Or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NEW-YORK or text HOPE-NEW-YORK in New York.
Ooh, getting hot over here. Producer Greg said, Ben Simmons, when someone shows you who they are, believe them. Now, it's not the first time Producer Greg has mentioned Ben Simmons on the show. He's not a big Ben fan. Very, very, very interesting. Let's get to our favorite segment. Oh, I'm sorry. I keep saying our favorite segment. Y'all have made it very clear that Greg's eye test takes is your favorite. My favorite, my personal favorite, is #AskKB. All you have to do is go onto Twitter/X or in the comment section of these episodes, use the #AskKB, and I try to pick some of my favorites and ask and answer them, given all of the stuff. First question comes from Jacob. Would you rather have an elite defender with little offensive talent or a great scorer with no defense for an entire playoff series? Now, Jacob, I'm assuming that not only is this player on my roster, but they're playing. Let's just say they're playing regular starter minutes, right? Because if it was up to me, I would say neither. Neither of these archetypes are going to be good for us to eventually win a championship. And if I'm in the playoffs, that's what I'm trying to do. The pros of having an elite defender. Obviously, you can stick him on to one of their better players. Now, if this elite defender is a big, I'm taking this 100% of the time, right? Because Rudy Gobert is a prime example of this. You say little to no offensive talent. Rudy Gobert doesn't have many offensive talents, right? He can catch the ball occasionally. He's going to dunk the ball because he's 7 foot tall. Other than that, there's no tricks in his bag other than that one move he pulled on Victor Wembanyama, which is, and again, this is coming from a Rudy Gobert fan. That is probably the best individual move I've ever seen Rudy Gobert do. And he did it on his countryman. He used to play alongside Victor Wembanyama, but he's got little to no offensive talent. But if you talk about a wing or a guard, it's so very tough. Some teams are going to realize this. So, I mean, these teams already know that, right? Coach Mark Dayton all understands that having Josh Giddey on the court is going to be a net negative for them on the offensive side of the ball. He knows that. He doesn't need to learn that. But that happens all the time, right? But on the opposite side of that, when you have a defender with zero to no defense, that guy is getting picked on every
single possession. So this is making me kind of want the defensive player. Because I believe, this is something I believe, and maybe this philosophy is flawed. Spacing can be created even without great shooting. So if we have this player that is a net negative on offense, I feel as though I can still put together a competent offense where we don't have to rely on him sitting in a corner and being wide open and playing 4-on-5. We can orchestrate this player in the offense one way or another so that it makes it flow. Now, I'm not saying I'm an offensive coach. I don't really know what those sets look like, but I believe that spacing can be created with good coaching. So I think I take that. I just kind of think about some of the smaller defenders that I've watched, the net negative defenders that I've watched, and see them players get played off the court so many times, or see them get attacked time in and time out. On the contrary, in the conference finals last year, Lakers versus Nuggets, Jared Vanderbilt is a damn good defensive player. This year, he undoubtedly would be their best perimeter defender. Now, he can guard multiple positions, but they could use a guy like him. But he was so bad offensively that he couldn't play in that series because he was going against one of the greatest basketball minds ever. There is no good option here. But give me the defender with the hopes that I can create some type of offense to make it okay with him on the offensive side of the ball. The next one comes from Jay Bird. Do you think your Bulls fandom will go away with the growth of your brand? This is a question I've asked myself multiple times. I actually asked Shams Charania this a few years back, because if you didn't know, Shams Charania grew up in the Chicagoland area. Most people that grew up in this area are going to find themselves Bulls fans, right? I think he's maybe a year older than me. So he, you know, born in the 90s. Obviously, when we were born, the Bulls are at an all-time high. And eventually, because of the way he progressed throughout his career, he no longer holds the title of a Bulls fan. And I asked him, was that difficult? Did it happen naturally? Or was it something that you had to attempt? And he said it was difficult for him to do. And that if he felt like it was just the best interest of what he does in his career, right? I don't have that. You know what I'm saying? I'm not a newsbreaker. I don't have to be, I don't know, objective a lot of the times. Like, I could try to be. But I think part of my brand is me being a Bulls fan. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's part of who I am. I can't lose that passion that I have for the Bulls. You saw the video that I uploaded after the deadline when they didn't do a goddamn thing for the third year in a row. Like, that cannot go away. No matter how high I could get in this world of my occupation, no matter how much I build my personal brand or the Enjoy Basketball brand, the Bulls will always be there for better or for worse. And I was just looking at some stuff, some stats, a little bit about my Chicago Bulls, who I vow to not talk about again after the deadline. Remember that episode? Well, I'm breaking my vow right now. If you got rid of the first month of the season, the Bulls have been winning on a pace of a 46-win team, which would put us in a play-in still. So mediocrity. I'm just, but better, but mediocre. One of the best clutch teams, the best clutch offense of basketball, baby. Don't get in the clutch game, Chicago Bulls, because they will win sometimes, most of the times, but still mediocre. Oh, speaking of the Bulls fandom, this comes from Fire AKME. That's our Tunis Carney Chauvis and Mark Eversley for you non-Bulls fans. Since it's Oscar seasons, can you name your top five sports movies of all time, boy? Now, I got to say, I am not one of those people that watch a ton of movies, right? I do not have a letterbox while I'm ranking movies and giving my personal opinions on them. But I have watched a decent amount of sports movies, but I can't say I've seen them all. I can't say I've seen all of the best ones. But so these are the top five of the ones I've seen myself. Not my favorite, because my favorite is Like Mike. But Like Mike's not a good movie. It's a nostalgic movie, and it's my favorite sports movie. But it's not a good one, so it's not on the list. The number one sports movie is Hoop Dreams. Anybody that has seen Hoop Dreams and can't agree with me having them number one, I don't know if I could trust your opinion anymore. Hoop Dreams, if for you younger kids out there, because I know a lot of y'all are young watching this episode, Hoop Dreams is a documentary that follows two kids in Chicago that have hoop dreams. Both of these guys are very talented for their age group. And this documentary showcased them from a kid all the way until they get to college. This is a documentary that took over a decade to film. It is beautiful. And it cannot be replicated. They tried to replicate it with Patrick Beverly. Oh, man. See, some of y'all not in tune with that Chicago movie scene. They tried to replicate it with Patrick Beverly when he was in high school. They can't. You can't do it. Hoop Dreams is number one. And I recommend it. If you're watching this episode, you're a diehard NBA fan. You had to be. You watched 23 minutes of me talk about nothing. Go watch Hoop Dreams. You will not be disappointed. It is a real life depiction of what Hoop Dreams is. Because all of us have had them. Not all of us have put the time in to make those hoop dreams a reality. These two kids had a camera crew follow them for all of their childhood until their adult life. And it was all about basketball. It's a beautiful, beautiful movie. Number two on my list is Rocky. Now, I can't say I've seen all the Rocky movies. Actually, I'm happy I haven't seen all the Rocky movies based on the opinion of a lot of people. But I tied Creed into it too. This is just my personal opinion. I enjoyed the Creed movie more. I'm not saying it's a better movie, but just I enjoyed Creed 1 more than Rocky 1 or Rocky 2, right? But still, Rocky 1 is probably number two on my list. And that might be partially nostalgia. I haven't watched it in a few years now, so I probably have to go back and make sure. But I feel pretty comfortable with having that / Creed in my number two spot. Number three is Moneyball, baby. Moneyball. I do want to say there's a bunch of genres of sports movies I have not seen. Don't ask me about a single hockey movie. Don't ask me about a single soccer movie other than Kicking and Screaming. Don't ask me about, you know what I'm saying? I haven't seen the Venus and Serena movie with Will Smith. I need to. It's on my list. It's on my list, man. I just haven't got to it just yet. So I'm sorry. But Moneyball. Moneyball is so very fun. After I watched Moneyball for the first time, I went home on 2K and I was like, can I replicate that? Can I build a budget team to go on to you know, surprise the masses? The idea of using analytics to build a team just made me so excited. Obviously, 2K and the actual Moneyball, it's not the same thing. But it made me go back and help me fall in love with baseball again. So who's that, Brad Pitt? Oh, I think it's Brad Pitt. Shout out to them for that movie because it was phenomenal. It was really phenomenal. My number four is Love and Basketball. A timeless piece. Not going to get much better than Love and Basketball. It has everything you could possibly want. It has comedic moments. It has moments that'll make you sad. It has romance. And it has basketball. Come on, man. Kyla Pratt is in it. If you know, you know. I love that movie. It does not get much better than that. The two leads in that movie played in like five movies together in like a five-year span. Like that was an elite couple back in the day. And I love seeing them. Well, they were both in The Wood. Oh, come on, man. Some of y'all too young, man. Some of y'all don't know about this stuff, man. But that's my number four. I quote Love and Basketball very regularly, and people don't be understanding the references, and it makes me very sad. It makes me very sad. Number five on my list, the last one to make it. And now I'm realizing three of my four movies are basketball movies, but hell, I'm a basketball enjoyer. That's my number one sport. It's He Got Game. Anytime I see an athlete in a movie, especially as the lead, I'm always hesitant. I'm always hesitant because, like, you goddamn Ray Allen. The hell you know about acting? You Anthony Edwards. You Juancho Hernangómez. What do you know about acting? Some of them can really get it done. And Jesus Shuttleworth, Ray Allen was one of those people. Denzel Washington is always a guy that can bring it, and he brings it in this one. Another movie that I quote, not as regular as Love and Basketball, but I quote sometimes. But it has to be top five for me. And there are a couple movies that missed the cut, man. Like Glory Road. Glory Road might not be a great movie, but man, is it nostalgic for me. I remember that UTEP team ended up getting put in NCAA basketball 08. So I took them and put them into nowadays, and they were awful in the game. But I was like, hell, they broke some things. The Colliberia in college basketball, baby. I got to show them love. So it's a bunch of movies like that. Hoosiers came to mind. Coach Carter came to mind. Talladega Nights came to mind. we go on and on. Rebound is one of the worst basketball movies I've ever seen. But I appreciate that question because you made me really dig deep to think about sports movies that I've seen. So yes, thank you for that. And last one comes from Hot Tamale 32. How valid is the we done with the 90s talk? Okay. For the people that don't be on social media like that, this is a trend on Twitter that has found its way. I'm sorry, from TikTok that has found its way to Twitter, where a few TikTok creators decided they want to sit down and watch 90s basketball and pick out all the flaws and so on and so forth, showing videos of missed shots, bad possessions, Michael Jordan not dribbling with his right hand on the left side, which is still wild. And it started the trend, we're done with the 90s. Don't talk to me about the 90s. That was bad basketball, yada, 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 yada. I honestly think that a lot of it is done in like just as a joke. But I do believe there are people that have that opinion. And do what you got to do. Do what you want to do. I'm not one of those people. I'm not one of those people that's going to discredit the whole 90s because we can watch some footage from the 1991 NBA Finals and see Michael Jordan, you know, playing with negative spacing or seeing that he's getting some opens like that. My co-host P put it very perfectly. I could not have said it any better. Without that, we don't have what we have now. So I got nothing but respect for every single era. Hell, even the '50s and the '60s. You talk about plumbers. You talk about people that have secondary jobs outside of the NBA/ABA. I still respect them because without what they're doing, we don't have Bron now. We don't have Curry, KD, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Nikola Jokic. We go on and on and on. I also didn't live that in real time. It's not going to be the same. It's just not going to be the same. The game has evolved. In my opinion, it's apples to oranges. It's the same game we're playing with different rules, different ways of playing. We are just smarter as basketball. Like, basketball coaches are smarter. They found out that the three-point line is valuable. So everything is so spaced out now. That was not a thing in the 90s. And you can use that as a negative. Oh, see, they weren't. No. I'm going to always respect Jordan. I'm going to respect Charles Barkley and all of the people. Now, I do believe that this is the now is the most talented the NBA has ever been. That's not a fact. I can't say it's a fact, but that is a real opinion of mine. But I'm not about to go look at 1995 and watch Jordan in the finals and be like, oh, this is mid. It's just different. That's all it is. It's really just different. And that's different is okay. Let's get to my top five when it comes to those bottom 10 teams about how excited I am about their season next year. Number five, give me the Charlotte Hornets. The thing that scares me is that LaMelo Ball does not play basketball regularly. You know, he's missed a bunch of games for the third straight season. I think the number is 30 plus games in the last three seasons, which is a little bit scary. His contract kicks in next season. Just something we don't talk about often, which makes, I mean, it's the Charlotte Hornets, right? Nobody really has expectations for them, but LaMelo Ball is such a great talent, such a dope talent. We just don't get to see him as often as we really want. You know what I'm saying? But I am going on the level of optimism because I've seen some pretty interesting stuff from them this season. I think that their goal is to bring back Miles Bridges. Let's talk about the basketball. And he fits alongside what they want to do. You know, Mark Williams got to get healthy. But LaMelo Ball and Brandon Miller, I feel like they're going to look so well together because we've seen Brand, as much as we talk about Wembanyama and we talk about Chet and we talk about some of the surprises like Jaime Jaquez, Brandon Miller, we've seen him get better and better throughout time. His decision maker is better than it was in like November, October. He's obviously more efficient now than he was in November, October. So he's slowly and surely getting better and better. And he's kind of the perfect kind of wing you want alongside of LaMelo Ball. And now you add in Mark Williams, who I don't even have a personal opinion about Mark Williams' basketball ability anymore because it's been so damn long. I'm optimistic about it, but I can't even pinpoint what his strong suits are. Well, yes, I can. But you know what I'm saying? It's just been so very long. And I think that their trade deadline this year kind of helps them out for next year being more competitive, right? Trey Mann is going to be in that rotation. Does he start? Does he not? I don't really know. But like Grant Williams is a real bench piece for them. We'll see if we get what version of him we could get. I'm optimistic about them. And they just have a brand of basketball, specifically when LaMelo is playing. That's just exciting at the end of the day. Number four on my list. And when I brought this list to the guys, to kind of see what they was thinking, they said I had the Toronto Raptors too high. And I understand it. The Raptors have had such a weird year. They trade away OG Anunoby and get back people. which is different. And I kind of, and this is going to feel weird, but I'm only talking about this. I kind of applaud Masai Ujiri from just going a different direction. Every time we see a really good player get traded, it's like, here's four first round picks. Masai said, hell with the picks. Give me real talent. Now, is that real talent and RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quickley going to ever account for more than just good starters? Maybe not. Maybe they do. I don't know. But I applaud him for not just going for the draft capital, okay? Pascal Siakam trade happened. That's where they got some draft capital. So they did get some, but not all. But then we get to some of the other deals that they made. They gave him a first-round pick to get Oche Agbaji and Kelly Olynyk, and now they extended Kelly Olynyk. And it's just like, I understand why Kelly Olynyk is important to your team. But is he that important? We get that. It's not an extension of like $26 million for 2 years. It's not like he's getting paid 20s or 30s annually, but it's just an interesting year. But the reason they are this high to me is because this year, the Toronto Raptors are third in assists per game. Last year, under Nick Nurse, they were 27th. Their talent this year is significantly worse than last year. Darko Rajakovic. I feel pretty damn good about Darko Rajakovic being considered one of the better coaches in basketball eventually. Because eventually the world is going to catch on. The Raptors are going to start winning basketball games eventually. It might not be next year. It might not be the year after that. But eventually they're going to start winning basketball games again, and people will come to realize the system that Darko Rajakovic has been putting into place. Did he steal it from the Knicks? I don't know how that court case has ended. Maybe he did. But this team moves the ball like we've never seen under their previous regime, and I enjoy that. And eventually they're going to have good shooters on their team. So those assist numbers are going to be higher and their offense will become more efficient because they're going to have players that can't shoot. Grady Dick has been inserted into the real lineup for like 15 games or so. He's averaging like 12 points per game, 40-something percent three-point shooter, a movement three-point shooter. This is something that this team hasn't really had because Gary Trent is so wishy-washy. I think in due time that they're going to be nice. Now, again, we're talking years down the line, but I think this offseason is a very interesting one for them with Scottie Barnes coming back from his injury and them having a full offseason together with Emmanuel Quickley and RJ Barrett, who since the All-Star break has looked amazing as well. So I'm just excited about what their offense could potentially look like when they have one of the most portable players in basketball and Kelly Olynyk. That is a real stat that you can look up. Portability, and Kelly Olynyk is number one. Third team on my list. This is the cream of the crop of the bad teams. Houston Rockets. And I wanted to put them higher. And get well soon, Alperen Şengün. Tough break today, man. Tough. And he's having an MRI. Maybe by the time this episode is out, we'll kind of have a full idea of what the injury is. But it looked so bad. But they had a ridiculously good offseason. You know, we already mentioned that a little bit earlier when we were talking about the Detroit Pistons and all. But Şengün has turned into a star. He has slowed down a little bit after the break, but then he bursted out with 45 points against the San Antonio Spurs, and he was getting his mojo back. I just think that another year of Jabari Smith Jr. eventually getting Tari Eason back because he hasn't really played much this season. Get well soon. He just underwent surgery. Amen Thompson has got better throughout the season. And boy, I want y'all, if you have not watched a Houston Rockets game recently, turn it on and watch Amen Thompson play defense. That's all I gotta say. He is of this draft class that has a ton of great defenders. Of the wing / guard defenders, he's one of one. Higher than his brother? Maybe he's one of two because his brother's pretty damn good too. But man, do he get after it. Man, do he get after it. You know who's been getting after recently too? Jalen Green. All right, Jalen. I'm seeing it. I'm seeing it defensively. I've seen you lock in, and he's up for a contract. I don't know what that money looks like, but I'm just excited to see what they can turn into. I'm excited about a Jabari Smith Jr. jump potentially next season. My number two team is the Memphis Grizzlies. Did you forget the Memphis Grizzlies existed? Because sometimes I do, because I have not actually watched them play basketball in some time. The best I got is when they had the one game before the break. Where they beat, I don't even remember what, was it the Warriors? They beat the Warriors? No, it was the Memphis, it was the Milwaukee Bucks. But I only watched the last 5 minutes of that game. Like, I'm watching the Vince Williams minutes. That's kind of it. But next year, Jaren is going to be healthy. You know, he's been doing his thing. You're going to get Desmond Bane back. New contract. And, of course, Josh should be back. I think about all of these bottom 10 teams. And I think about the Western Conference ones. The Grizzlies should be back. Houston is hoping to be back. I guess that's it. But we already have 10 teams that's actively competing to make the postseason. And now we're going to add two more that are really, really going for it. Like, Houston fans are not going for another year of not being good. You know what I'm saying? It's, I think this is, it will be the fifth year since the Harden stuff, since they decided to move on from Harden. We can't have 5 years, 6 years in the lottery, man. So that is a team that's going to be going for it. And then my number one team, the San Antonio Spurs, might be going for it too. We could have 13 teams actively going for it. I don't think the Blazers are going to do anything that's going to make them actively going for it. Again, Utah is so up in the air. They could be too. They could be added there. They could be 14 real teams out West trying. But not, my number one, again, San Antonio Spurs. And that is all Wembanyama. Huh? No, 98% Wembanyama. Give me 2% to Devin Vassell, who's looked pretty good. I made a video about Victor Wembanyama and the San Antonio Spurs future. And in that video, I said that I would rather them go a little bit patient on the timeline with Wembanyama instead of going out to go get Trae Young or whatever the next guard could potentially be on the market. And a lot of people didn't like that. But my idea of this is that finding a secondary star outside of, again, trading for Trae Young, who's a star in himself, it's hard to do unless you are bad for multiple years. Now, they have not been amazing in drafting the last 5 years or so. So maybe that's a reason not to be calm, because it's not like they've been hitting on all of their picks or something. But I get scared when teams increase their timeline so much. But again, generational talent, it can go either way. But the Spurs are my number one most exciting team for next season. Even if they don't do nothing this offseason, they still gonna have a big fella, and I'm here for that. The last thing we got to do today is hear Greg's eye test takes.
All right, Kenny, first of all, I want to say your list of movies was super impressive. I honestly wasn't expecting, because you've told me you're not really a movie guy, but loved the variety. The only two I think I would have thrown in there from my end would have been Invictus, about the rugby team from South Africa. It was with Morgan Freeman and Matt Damon, and Jerry Maguire with Tom Cruise. Those are my two throw-ins, but okay. Super impressed with the list.
Invictus, I'm adding it to my list of things to watch. I don't know anything about rugby, but you said Morgan Freeman and you got me, so I'm here.
Yep, it's excellent. All right, first one here. So if the Sixers remain the 7th seed, I believe, and if Embiid comes back, I believe they will win their first round series. And my main reasoning is they have yet to play the last few years without any pressure in the playoffs. And in this matchup, especially with Embiid not being at full health, I believe they would have almost no pressure.
So in this hypothetical, let's say they stay the 7th seed and they win that first game. That first round is against the Bucks, right?
Right now, I think it would be the Cavs.
Oh, you're saying if they stay 6 and the Cavs are at 3.
Right. Aren't the Cavs at 2? Am I wrong?
No, they lost tonight. So it's shifted just tonight. So that's okay. That's okay. Either way, let's say they project to go against the Cavs. I don't know, man. I think I would feel more optimistic about the Cavs with me not knowing what percent Joel Embiid is going to be ready for. You know what I'm saying? If we're getting 100% of Joel Embiid, the one that was the most points per minute earlier in the season, I'm actually still might not take that, honestly. I might have taken the Cavs in this series. I think I would take the Cavs in this one, too. I think they just have a little bit more variance this year than last year. And though last year's first round was disgusting, lights were too bright, I trust them a little bit more this year, especially Jared Allen, who has been very candid about the lights being too bright and how he's prepared himself for a playoff push. And I think that they don't really have a Donovan Mitchell answer, but you could say the same. They don't have a Joel Embiid answer. Nobody really does. But I would take the Cavs in that series. I think so.
No, it's a fair point. It feels like the Cavs have been preparing all season from their big L last season. It feels like they've taken that lesson and really tried to build on it. So it's a fair point. Second one, Team USA will win the gold medal this summer and no game will be within 10 points. Let's say 15 points.
15. Okay. I was going to say 10 points is kind of a stretch. I think I agree, but then again, I think about 2008. And actually I think this year's team is going to be better than 2008. I mean, we've never had Steph Curry and LeBron play together, just even though LeBron's going to be 39. He's 39 right now. But even in that game, like, Spain was really in those games. You know what I'm saying? Until like the last couple minutes. And I might be getting my years mixed up. If I'm not mistaken, Dwayne Wade came off the bench and flipped the game around. But again, I could be missing up my years. Either way, I think that basketball is one of the reasons basketball is such a beautiful sport to me, is that Team USA can have 12 of the best 17 players in the world on their team, and nothing is still guaranteed, right? I do believe they will go undefeated. Do not get me wrong. I don't think there's a team out there, even though, oh my God, Serbia's going to have Big Yoke this time around instead of in FIBA when they didn't. I think there will be a team that's going to push it a little bit. And I don't know what that who that team is. But if you were asking me to pick or put money on winning every game by 15 or having one game where it's 14, I'd probably put the money on a 14.
All right, last one. I have no evidence to back this up, but it feels like since the All-Star break, there's been some sort of memo from the league to referees telling them to call the game a little differently. It feels like guys are getting less calls on, you know, leaning in and foul baiting. And I'm assuming it's in anticipation for some rule changes next year, kind of test it out. But what are you seeing?
I completely agree. When we were doing I did a simulcast for the people at home with Nike in the NBA, where we watched Toronto Raptors versus Phoenix Suns. And there were a few times in that where we had a kind of break, and the break for us was actually watching the game, where there are a couple plays that I'm seeing, and we talked about on the broadcast, was like, that's usually a foul. And one of them was like a fast break dunk. And I forget who, somebody chased it down, and it was marginal contact, but enough contact that, and traditionally they're like, okay, that's a whistle, and they haven't done it. And I personally agree with you, Greg. I do believe there has been some type of shift, and some people have enjoyed the shift. Some people have not. Me personally, I am completely okay. The main thing we talked about when we were talking about the rules and everything is call it as if it is the playoffs. And I don't know if we've turned the switch completely there, like it's the playoffs, but we're getting closer and closer to that. And I think it's caused it so that Thursday night, we had seven games on. The average margin of victory in those seven games are 3.5 points. And I can't say that's all refereeing and stuff, but every single one of those games, at least the ones that I tuned into, there are moments where like, okay, he's getting into him a little bit more. You know, that little body is something that they might call. Or that move that DeMar DeRozan did. He did get a call against y'all. That's the night
against Kuminga.
Yeah. He did get that one. But there was one third quarter, I want to say. Or like that's a traditional DeMar DeRozan move. They swallowed the whistle.
Yeah.
And I am completely, completely okay with that because I think it gives a better product. Nobody loves the game of basketball for the free throws or to see the refs get duped out by the players. So I agree that something has changed, and I like it a lot.
Yeah, it definitely ups the intensity of games. And the other thing, the quickest way to get people to change is for them to feel shame or embarrassment. And you just look stupid when you're trying to lean in and draw a foul and you don't get it. And that's the quickest way to make change.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree. And there are a few players that obviously do it more than others. But the moment we're never going to get rid of it. But it's at an all-time high, for sure. And yeah, not having a whistle be blown will change everything. We saw that in FIBA, right? Mikal Bridges did it in the very first FIBA warm-up game, and then he just fell on the floor, flailing his arms, like, okay, nothing happened. And I don't know if I saw him do it the rest of the tourney. That's all it takes. You on national TV looking like a fish out of water. That's all it takes. Let us know in the comment section, do you agree or disagree with Greg's eye test takes? And let me know if I got my ranking correct. Probably didn't. Especially if your team was at the bottom five instead of the top five. But that's just my own personal subjective opinion, okay? Also, let me know your top five sports movies. He just put me on to another one that I'm putting on my list. I'm going to find it. I'm going to watch it. And maybe I'll give a review one day. But let me know if there are some other ones that I missed. Don't comment basketball ones, because I feel like I've seen a lot of the basketball movies. But if you have some other ones, like he said, rugby. I've never seen I don't know anything about rugby. But Morgan Freeman got me there. Leave a like, subscribe, 5 stars on Spotify, Apple, Podbean, all of those places. And I'll see y'all in a couple days.